Welcome to the Heart Rate Variability Podcast. Each week we talk about heart rate variability and how it can be used to improve your overall health and wellness. Please consider the information in this podcast for your informational use and not medical advice. Please see your medical provider to apply any of the strategies outlined in this episode. Heart Rate Variability Podcast is a production of Optimal LLC and Optimal HRV. Check us out at optimalhrv.com. Please enjoy the show. Welcome, friends, to the Heart Rate Variability Podcast. I am really excited for our guest today. I met her over LinkedIn, just one of those random things where LinkedIn connected us started just to look at the research being done by our guest today, and got, I think immediately, maybe the third in our back and forth on LinkedIn, asked her to be on the podcast because I just couldn't wait to explore her work. So I'm really excited to welcome Rabia to the show. And Rabia, just give, for our listeners, can you just give a quick introduction of yourself before I'm so excited to jump into your research, but just a quick introduction of you before we dive in.
First of all, thanks very much, Matt, for inviting me here today. It's a pleasure to be here. My name is Rabia, and I am a finally a PhD student at Bournemouth University here in the UK. And in terms of my academic background, it's been quite interdisciplinary in nature. I did my undergrad in biotechnology, and then I went on doing master's in environment and human health at the University of Exeter here in the UK. And so it's been quite, you know, sort of multidisciplinary in nature. And so for my PhD, I'm looking at the effect of combat injury on heart rate variability in a cohort of British military veterans and personnel. And this PhD project is in collaboration with the Dawn Study that I'll be talking about, you know, in the chat today.
Awesome. So
just a disclaimer that I'm not a clinician by any means. So yeah, I'm just, you know, a regular academic student here.
That we can almost use the term doctor for. So you got my respect there.
Maybe there.
So just before we dive into the specifics, I just kind of would love to hear, how'd HRV come onto your radar? When did you become interested? Because I'm assuming you could have gone a lot of different directions with your focus. Why HRV? How did you learn about it? I just love to get a little bit of background on what got you interested.
Yeah, so I think I'm going to give you a very cheeky answer there. I think HRV found me, as in, you know, I landed on this project. So when I joined this project, it was already kind of, you know, predefined, as in, you know, the aims and the research question and everything. But of course, you know, along the way, I sort of informed the, you know, how the analysis plan and how we're going to be taking, you know, from there. So it has definitely evolved. But yeah, prior to this PhD project, I didn't know much about HRV. So I was kind of, you know, HRV naive before I started working with this project. So whatever I've learned about HRV, it's been, you know,
been through this project.
Yeah.
Well, impressive that you have, I'm just kind of looking at your page here. Quite a bit of articles published already for someone new to it. So let's dive in. So you come into this project, you didn't have a whole lot of background on heart rate variability. I would love to get, because when I'm looking at your background, that there seems to be your expertise lying in, you know, heart rate variability as it applies to traumatic brain injuries with military veterans, if I'm kind of drawing that out. And I wonder sort of what kind of are you learning from the research? I know that's a big question, but I'll give you plenty of room to kind of explore some of the research you've done and the insights that have evolved out of the research.
Yeah, so yeah, it's a big question. So I'm just going to, you know, break the answer into pieces.
Absolutely.
So for you to understand my research, I think it's very important that everybody understands, you know, the Dawn Study here. So because that's where, you know, that's where I'm using the data from. So ADVANCE is an acronym, and it stands for Armed Services Trauma Rehabilitation Outcome Study. It's a mouthful, but, you know, it's a collaboration between King's College London, Imperial College London, at the Academic Department of Military Rehabilitation here in the UK. So it's a longitudinal prospective cohort study that's designed to span over 20 years, and it aims to investigate the long-term impact of combat injury on various psychological, physiological, and social outcomes in British military veterans and personnel, those who served in Afghanistan. So that's the context. So in terms of my research, just a correction there, that I'm not looking at the traumatic brain injury and HRV. I'm looking at as a wider aspect of injury, as in it's not just the TBI. So it's a myriad, it's a wide collection of injuries there. We've got blast injuries, we've got gunshot wounds, we've got assaults, fractures, burns, and other sorts of injury. And one interesting aspect about my research is that it's not acute trauma, because in the past we've had lots of studies on acute trauma and HRV. So that's not the case here. And again, connecting back to the ADVANCE, that ADVANCE study is currently in the third wave of data collection. So we've already have two waves done. So I've looked at the baseline, and I think I'm happy to share the results of the baseline analysis, because that's something that's already published, with all of my papers that you've been reading.
Yeah, I would love to learn. Yeah, please do share.
Okay, so in terms of my results, so there, first of all, let me just give you a quick rundown of all the themes that I've explored in my PhD so far. So
Awesome.
I've looked at the reliability and validity of using ultra short-term HRV, the one derived from femoral arterial waveforms, as a proxy source for short-term ECG-based HRV. So that's one aspect. And in another set of papers, I've looked at the association between combat injury and HRV, and also looking at the effect of certain mediating factors that could potentially affect this relationship. And then I've also looked at the effect of different types of breathing protocols, like spontaneous breathing and slow-paced breathing on HRV in the injured. So it's been very sort of comprehensive, really. So I'm just gonna take it one by one.
Sounds good.
So in terms of the results, first of all, you need to understand the composition of the groups there. So we've got two groups. We've got injured and the uninjured. So those in the injured group, we have participants who were injured during the deployment of the zone, and they sustained severe combat injuries, and that required, aeromedical evacuation to a UK hospital for treatment rehabilitation. Whereas the uninjured group, as the name implies, they were uninjured, and they have been frequency matched to the injured group based on their age, rank, and role in theatre and deployment period. So that, they are similar in characteristics, in all those characteristics, except the exposure is different, that being, combat injury. So that's the difference between the two groups.
So probably the
So
psychological impact of being in war would probably be equal, similar. I mean, an injury obviously is the variable you're measuring, but both have been exposed to
exactly
the
the same
psychological
operational
challenges
environment.
of war
Yeah,
too. So excellent.
exactly. So both of the participants in the groups have been exposed to the same operational environment. So it's just the combat injury that's different.
Gotcha.
So in terms of the baseline, the reason I had to sort of explore the reliability and validity of ultra short-term HRV was because we know that PPG has been used as a surrogate source for short-term ECG-based HRV, but this particular signal that I've used for my research had not been used before. So I had to sort of work from scratch, right from the scratch, establish its reliability and validity. And the results suggest that it's as reliable and as valid as the ECG-based 5-minute short-term HRV. So that's quite interesting.
Yeah.
So that we have the measure there.
So can you
So
talk a little bit more? Because one of the things I was interested about when I was looking at your articles was the ultra short-term heart rate variability. So I'm assuming that's the measure that you're talking about. For us HRV nerds out here, I think when you said, "Ooh, a valid measure," can you describe that in a little bit more detail for us?
Yeah, so abuse the firmware OTA waveforms to measure ultra-short-term HRV. And when I say ultra-short-term HRV, abused RMSSD. So why RMSSD? Because it's a superstar in the HRV world because it's reliable and invalid in terms of ultra-short-term HRV analysis, because that's what we've seen in the previous evidence. So informed by that. And of course, because the length of that signal was just up to 16 seconds, I could not have gone for short-term HRV,
Right.
and I could not have gone for other frequency-based measures of HRV. So RMSSD seemed the most suitable measure of HRV. So that's what I've reported. So in a nutshell, I've looked at the association between ultra-short-term RMSSD and combat injury in these two groups.
Excellent. Thank you for that. So and you're seeing that, if I'm hearing you right, 16 second RMSSD. You validated that as a measure. Let me just ask the question, equivalent to a 5 minute RMSSD measurement.
Exactly, yeah.
Wow. And so I just want to make sure, because I think everybody who's listening to this is jumping to the conclusion of, oh, that 5 minute reading that we're doing and have done for years, we could get the same data in 16 seconds? Question mark. So let me throw that out to you, because that's kind of what I'm sure you've got a lot of people listening to potentially excited about.
Yeah, I think that's the type of question that's always been there. As in, if it's as reliable as the short minute, as the short-term HRV, is there any need to measure short-term HRV? So of course, the answer is yes. I mean, you're looking at two types of things. You're looking at ultra short-term HRV and short-term HRV. Short-term HRV has its own advantages as compared to ultra-short-term HRV. You've got more limitations with ultra-short-term HRV because, like I said, you're limited with just RMSSD. Whereas for short term, you have wider collection of other measures like frequency based. You can tell more about the physiology, with the help of frequency based measures. Not to say that RMSSD can't say that, but it's just that really depends on the type of question that you're trying to answer and the type of data, of course.
Okay. So we shouldn't necessarily throw out our 3, 4, 5 minute approach. You're just
Not
kind
at
of
all.
adding something really juicy and exciting to the existing research with looking at it from this perspective.
Yeah, and of course, having said this, while I've looked at ultra short-term HRV at baseline, at the first follow-up, I've looked at short-term HRV. So it's not like that, I'm just relying on one method. It's better to explore that, the ultra short-term HRV could also do the same thing. But I'm just saying that, we've just explored that, there exists another way of looking at HRV.
Awesome. That's so exciting. So if you just stop there, we would have a great episode that would blow a lot of people's minds. But let's continue into the research with the veterans now.
Yeah, so this paper that I'm the results that I'm sharing now, so this was published in BMJ Military Health. So in this one, I was looking at the effect of combat injury on HRV, ultra-short-term HRV, using the method that I just described, in the injured and also, in the uninjured. So using the multivariate regression analysis, the drill, you look at the associations after adjusting for the confounding variables there. So another interesting point that I'd like to highlight here is that I've not just looked at injury, I've looked at other aspects of injury as well. So I've looked at injury severity and injury mechanism and also the effect of amputation. So we found through the multivariate regression analysis, we found that as compared to the uninjured group, in the injured group, injury, higher injury severity, blast as a mechanism of injury, and amputation, all four of them were independently associated with lower RMSSD. In other words, it would mean that the injured group seems to have lower parasympathetic tone as compared to the uninjured group. And it's not just, again, it's not just acute trauma. The time elapsed since injury, it's been on average 8 years.
Okay, interesting.
So, Yeah, so it is interesting. So it appears that, you know, even 8 years after injury, where the injured participant should have gone, you know, to parasympathetic rebound, you
Right.
know, in terms of recovery, it seems like it's not the case, or maybe the recovery time for that rebound is taking longer, you know,
Interesting.
because it's been 8 years since injury. So that is an interesting finding. And because of the longitudinal nature of the data, it would be interesting to see that, you know, if that's going to be changed, you know, with the upcoming follow-ups.
Because I, and I think it's more popular literature, but by real researchers who I respect, it seems like there's this message we get, which again, we're looking at a very specific population, a very specific injury, but like, oh, if you have an accident, you go through something like an amputation, that basically you rebound, I think it's like 6 to 8 months, your happiness level and all this kind of rebounds, just like if you win the lottery, you have a short-term peak when you get that new car, new house, but then it kind of drops back to baseline. But what you're really finding is, and again, I think the powerful thing about your research is both groups have been in war, so they've experienced these things, but it seems like this trauma associated with a physical injury is lingering in a way
Exactly.
that just the psychological traumas of war may not be. And that's fascinating. And I'm kind of reading you right with what you're finding.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's I think in a nutshell, the idea is that the effect of combat injury on HRV seems to be lasting rather than, you know, transient.
Yeah.
So I mean that's at least what the results suggest.
And did you look at because I'm sure quite a few people in both groups may have gotten like mental health support for trauma. I'm sure there's PTSD in both groups and other things going on. Did that variable play? Did you study that? Did you see any difference if you did study it?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. And so that leads me to talk about the next analysis that I conducted. So this analysis, the results that I'm talking about now, was published in Military Medicine, if somebody wants to give it a read. In this one, basically, so once I had identified that, you know, there is a significant association between combat injury and HRV, I wanted to dig deeper and see if this association was being mediated by, you know, the usual suspects, like you said. Depression, anxiety, and physical function like, you know, 6-minute walk test and BMI. So, you know, I used the structural occasion modeling approach for the mediation analysis, and I found that, you know, to my surprise, that BMI six sorry BMI depression and anxiety did not significantly mediate the relationship between, you know, HRV and combat injury, but the 6-minute walk test did. So
Fascinating.
yeah, so in other words, it appears that if there is any factor that could potentially offset the adverse effect of combat injury in HRV, it looks like it could be enhanced physical function or physical function for that matter. So that's quite interesting because
Yeah.
we this is quite important evidence because we need that evidence to inform, you know, the recovery pathway and to, you know, all the practices, you know, related with the rehabilitation of the injured.
Wow. Boy, so do you my mind's going in like 20 different places, which is not great for
I
a
know.
podcast host to be stirring all this around. So like, what do you think is happening? Let me just ask that question, because I mean the what do you think is going on there? Because I mean, amputations and injuries are probably, I'm just thinking about like what a leg injury versus an arm injury and movement and mobility. Just give me your thoughts on this as I kind of organize a more logical question that I might follow up with that what you just said.
Yeah, I think that's a fair question. So, of course, like you said, you know, lots of things going on there. But again, I think you have to be very cautious in terms of the interpretation there, because I think since there are so many factors, playing their part in this equation, so you need to be very careful. So I've just looked at one wave, and that's what I've been talking here. So it would be interesting to see that, what we see in the upcoming waves, upcoming follow-ups, because it could be, like our statistician would say, it would be a blip. Maybe it's going to be changed in the next follow-up, maybe change in the next one. We don't know that. But what it tells us is that it's preliminary evidence, and it is an important evidence, and we need that information to sort of, guide the other questions that we need to sort of answer this question, in a holistic manner, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely. And just out of curiosity too, did you have, so collecting the ultra, well, you just have heart rate variability data, but looking at the ultra short term, did you get that, when did you start collecting that on the group? Was that a pre-deployment? Was that a post-injury? Like, I'm just curious about when did you kind of start collecting the baseline data?
So it's been, so like I said, on at baseline, the time to assessment, the baseline assessment has been on average 8 years. So whatever data that we've collected in the advanced study has been after
Okay.
injury.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just, because of all those questions of like, again, just kind of trying to think about the impact on this on everybody,
Unfortunately.
and all those pieces, I think would be an interesting thing because of working with folks in the military, which, I've worked with on the psychological end with PTSD with vets, especially severe things like addiction, homelessness, a range of kind of issues after the deployment's done, is trying to, what is happening with the psychological pieces of war? How does that, how do both of those groups compare to a non-military group or a military group that wasn't deployed into a war zone? All these kind of questions that I think our veterans helping them. Is the motivation here, but yet the curiosity from our perspective is what's going on pre, post deployment, those sort of things.
I hear you.
Just fascinating to see what war does to somebody's autonomic nervous system.
Exactly, I hear you. And I think it would have been equally interesting to see the pre-deployment HRV. Of course, we don't have that, but in the ideal world, would have been great, to see that, how that's changed from pre-deployment to, after deployment, after injury, and then, after several years since injury. So that would have been, a great
Well, hey,
interesting.
you get that doctorate. We can have fun with this. So I love what you're doing here and how you're thinking about it, though. So before I move on, because I want to look at another aspect of some of the studies that you've done, but just any other sort of insights. I don't want to move on too quickly if there's more to cover here.
Yeah, so one insight I've already shared in terms of the mediation, the effect of 6 minute walk test as a mediating factor on the relationship between combat injury and HRV. So that was, quite interesting to see.
Yes.
And the other thing would be, seeing the, of course, the investigation of different types of breathing protocol was not as such part of my PhD, but I've looked at it anyway because I was supposed to use one of the breathing protocols. So I had
Yeah,
to make
that's going to be my
another.
next question to you anyway. So let's dive in.
I had to make an informed decision that, so in advance at the first follow-up, and at the first follow-up, we started collecting the ECG data, something that wasn't there at baseline. And, because it was all happening during the COVID, so, the timelines were disrupted, so that brought, these changes. Anyway, so, so for my other paper, the one published in EMNR, I think, so, I was supposed to make an informed decision as to which breathing protocol should be used when the aim is to assess the effect of combat injury on HRV. So I looked at spontaneous breathing and slow-paced breathing at 6 cycles per minute, and their effect on HRV. And of course, we know there is, mounting evidence on it that, slow-paced breathing at 6 cycles per minute is associated with, increasing RMSSD. That's, and also, other measures of HRV. But yeah, so back to my question, which breathing protocol should be used? So we thought that, since we are trying to understand the physiological effect of combat injury on HRV, it would be better to go with spontaneous because, slow-paced breathing itself is an intervention. So we don't want to, cloud the results there. So that was basically the idea behind this particular study. So it's, I think the findings are in agreement with the previous evidence that, 6 cycles per minute, this breathing protocol does lead to increase in HRV and as compared to the spontaneous breathing in the injured.
So do you see? Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, sorry. I was just going to say that, this does give us the preliminary evidence in terms of, the use of HRV biofeedback therapy. I know that this is not exactly that, but the idea is, still in the periphery that, you could use HRV biofeedback therapy or slow-paced breathing as an intervention in this particular population to elevate HRV.
So wouldn't it, that's awesome. And I guess probably to our audience, not incredibly surprising at this point, as we've explored in the podcast so much on HRV biofeedback. I'm curious, one, let me ask you a quick, how often did you measure the ultra short-term heart rate variability? Were you collecting this on a daily basis? Was this more folks coming into a laboratory setting? Just, I would love, I'm sure my audience is thinking, because the HRV nerds out there like myself is like, how often did you measure this? And then I got to follow up with the breathing thing, but just like, how did you get this data? How often did you collect it with these veterans?
Yeah, so for the ultra short-term HRV, I've used the so basically in terms of the protocol, we've got the pulse wave analysis and pulse wave velocity that's measured using the bicorder device, and we use the ECG recordings that's measured using the Bluetooth wearables. So for ultra short-term HRV, because I've used femoral arterial waveforms from the pulse wave velocity measurements, that's done using the bicorder. So that's coming from the bicorder, and we do that in a single session. And I
Okay.
forgot to tell you about the numbers. It's, both in the injured group and the uninjured groups, we have 500 plus participants. So at baseline, the total number was 1,145.
Awesome.
So it's, lots of participants coming in. It's quite fascinating to have that sort of data,
Yeah, it's
Yeah,
awesome. So
quite
when
enriching.
you saw the benefits of the paced breathing on ultra short term HRV, which again,
So,
oh, go ahead. Sorry.
a correction. So the paced breathing was on short-term HRV.
Okay, short term HRV. So you're looking at that kind of like, which, let me see how best ask this question. I'm curious of, obviously when you pace your breathing, you're artificially in some ways improving your heart rate variability scores. I'm curious because you may not have studied this, but did you see like any longer term benefits? I don't know if this was, I guess the question is, was just kind of a one-time comparison, or did you have a group, or did the group kind of do HRV biofeedback on a regular basis, and then you could see improvements over time with this? Just kind of wondering how you looked at the difference in breathing.
Yeah, that's a fair question. So it was just one time
Okay.
comparison. Yeah, because we're not trying to introduce any intervention, but we
Yes.
are
Yeah.
collecting the data. So
Yeah.
we are quite aware that slow-paced breathing is an intervention. So if the injured group is going to practice slow-paced breathing, it's going to ultimately affect all other outcomes. So
Absolutely.
it's just one time thing, and it's just in the protocol. So we have 5 minutes of spontaneous breathing. That's followed by 5 minutes of paced breathing.
Awesome. So pretty, I mean, I'm sure probably the hypothesis going in is that we would see increased, but again, with this specific populations, really good to know that the paced breathing could help, I guess, over time. And this is speculation, so I always like to give researchers that heading to work on is that we are seeing improvements in HRV with paced breathing, but you weren't measuring the longer term impacts of an HRV biofeedback practice integrating there, but at least a little preliminary information that,
Exactly.
it does improve heart rate variability in a very short-term way to study it.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly the point. And of course, it's important to look at that because ultimately the point is to use this information to design and inform interventions, to provide best possible care for the injured.
Awesome. I'm curious about, I assume you're in somewhat of a conversation with folks in the military, having access to all this data. I just kind of interested to see what is your conversations been like? I'm sure people are, if I was in the military, I'd be wondering, okay, it seems like these sort of injuries have a longer term negative impact on our vets. I'm sure they're asking you, what's this mean for us, or how can we better support that piece? So I'm curious about conversations you've had after publishing this research about how we might better serve those individuals who protect us.
Yeah, I think, and that is a very important question to answer. I think so. In terms of my research, it's a sort of feed with the Dwan study is feeding into a bigger, research. So my project is a part of a bigger research. So it's not just the Dwan study. It's not just the HRV that we're looking at. We're also looking at other aspects like, we're looking at mental health. We're looking at daily functioning such as pain, stress, perceived social support, and other factors as well. So and cardiovascular risk outcomes as well. So what I'm trying to say is that it's not just one thing. So we are all of us, we are trying our best to see and draw, a fair picture of, what the profile looks like for an injured participant as compared to the uninjured, so that we could use that information to, sort of understand the long-term impact of combat injury. And we are sort of taking that one thing at a time, in the sense that we don't have that evidence now. So we're trying to build that evidence. So once we have that, evidence base, then we can take it to the next level and see that, if there are any sort of interconnectedness. For example, I've recently collaborated with my fellow advanced researcher. We've looked at the association between PTSD and RMSSD. So I can't talk about the results, but the results are really interesting because it's still in review. So I'm not going to be sharing the results. But yeah, so again, long story cut short, I think it's the idea is to see if there is an opportunity to see the interconnectedness of different factors and how that's sort of ultimately affecting the end product.
We got promised me to come back on the show when you are able to share that data, because I mean, my
Definitely.
curiosity, I mean, really got sparked with, like, we have so many different kind of best practice trauma treatments now for psychological trauma, PTSD. And what I'm fascinated with your research is you seem to be, and again, correct me if my words are off here, but you what I see is that we may want to treat people with a physical illness or injury associated with the trauma of just being in war, being in battle, that there may be different ways to approach that group. Maybe it's just the different level of support. Maybe it's how we transition them back to society. I think it probably opens up more questions, which is what great research does. Opens up more questions than it answers. But to me, as a clinic, the kind of the clinical part of it is, okay, we're seeing maybe a different level of long-term autonomic impact in this specific group. I don't have any answers, but what questions do we need to be asking about how we could better serve them moving forward? And again, short-term, ultra short-term or short-term HRV potentially gives us a metric to measure that as we think about it more from that clinical side.
Exactly. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, what is there anything we've missed? Because I've got a few final questions for you, but I want to make sure we haven't missed anything big in your research that you've been doing.
Not really. I think we've covered the major bits and pieces, yeah.
Awesome. So, as somebody who kind of got into this HRV, having become part of this study, I'm just curious, what do you think about heart rate variability now? Like, we're outside the research, so we can just put that aside. Let's talk about you. You were new to this metric. I'm sure having reviewed your work, you are now an expert on this metric. What do you think about heart rate variability?
Oh gosh, that's an interesting question. So I think HRV is such a sensitive marker. I mean, no matter how many confounding variables you're adjusting for, you're controlling for, there is going to be something that seems to affect it anyway. So it is such a sensitive marker, and it is quite fascinating in the same at the same time. So, but yeah, over the course of these 3 years, I've learned a lot, and it's been quite a ride in terms of learning about HRV, the different methods, the different measures. And one recurring trend is that if HRV was a theme park, that then RMSSD would be the roller coaster. You can't just ignore it. It's always there. It's
Yeah.
like an integral part of it.
Love that.
So no many how many HRV measures we look at, it always boils down to RMSSD. So that's quite interesting to know that, because I think it saves you time, because I think it's sort of preferred because of certain reasons, like it's got better statistical properties, it's less influenced by the respiratory changes. So I think it's a star because of because of some reasons there. But yeah, so that's my understanding of HRV now. And I think one more thing that I've learned is that HRV is not just one size fits all marker, if that makes any sense. So there is no one practical number that's applicable for everybody. So context matters a lot, and it should be taken as a personalized and a bespoke marker. And especially in terms of military, I'm in a I would be a proponent of going with the HRV daily tracking, so that the participants are able to establish their own baseline norms. Because yes, of course, 5 minute or ultra short-term HRV, these they do tell us about the autonomic state. But when you do daily tracking, that tells you more. And you could, as an individual, you could see that how adjustment to different lifestyle factors like sleep, diet, physical activity, all those are things, how they could affect your own baseline HRV value and everything. So I think that's another thing that I've learned, that use HRV as a bespoke slash personalized marker, and that's going to be more helpful.
Yeah.
But we can use that. I mean, that's what I'm going to be pitching for maybe in the future, but let's see.
Yeah, well, that was my kind of follow-up final question is, now that you've sort of seemed to have the end in sight as far as going through your doctoral program, wow, what you have done in that process is spectacular. So congratulations. Just looking at your bio page on the university's website, I've interviewed some people who've been in the field for 20 years without the publications that you have. So congratulations on really
Thank you.
adding so much to our understanding in a relatively, I'm sure it doesn't seem like a short period of time to you, but in a relatively short period of time, where do you see yourself going? Are you going to be like, oh, as soon as I'm out of here, I don't ever want to think about HRV ever again? Is it something that you see as part of your future? Are you just like, I got to get through the next few months and then ask me that question, Matt? I'm just kind of curious, where do you see HRV playing in your future and the direction of your career coming out of school?
Oh, that's a tricky question. So I haven't really thought about that, but of course, I've invested 3 years of my life, researching about HRV. So I'm not going to be, leaving it anytime
Yeah,
soon. So
good.
I am very much interested in looking at, once, with my PhD research, I've looked at, you know, the how combat injury affects HRV. I think it would be only logical to see that, you know, how we could use HRV as an intervention now that we have seen the evidence. So I would be more interested in looking at, you know, how we could use HRV biofeedback or, you know, resonance frequency or, you know, all sorts of interventions or, and also, you know, looking at HRV, like I said, like HRV daily tracking or profiling and all sorts of things. So, yeah.
Well, very cool. Because I was hoping that would be your answer, because coming out of just with this wealth of knowledge and understanding so early in your career, I was hoping you'd want to stick around and keep teaching us about this aspect. Because again, what the work that you're doing, I think is, well, I think will be really incredibly fascinating. Not just kind of the ultra, you know, short term, which was a new kind of idea for me. I mean, I could pretty much understand what it was, but you know, just that little nugget was, you know, a huge thing that you are contributed to my understanding. And then obviously working with the population that we should all care about really, you know, powerfully, and have been through trauma. You know, unpacking this but the way you have is just so important. So I'm glad you're deciding to maybe continue to stick around and teach us more and more as your career evolves.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you very much for your kind words, and that seems like a plan. And can I just take a quick moment and, you know, give a huge shout out to my supervisors? And of course, you know, they have been a huge part of this research.
Please take all the time you would like to give them credit, please.
Yeah, so, you know, Professor Christopher Booth and Professor Ahmed Kadav and everybody at the Advanced Study, because, you know, it's just a one person's job, really, with, you know, these many participants.
Yeah.
So I'd like to acknowledge everybody, you know, have played their part, you know, ranging from the admin, the data collection team, and to the project board and everybody involved. So yeah, thanks very
Awesome.
much to those, and thank you for your kind words and, you know, the appreciation of the work.
Great. Well, I'm going to put a link in the show notes. People can find that as always at optimalhrv.com with all the articles you have written on this. Because, like I said, your bio is incredible, and you're still in school. Like this is like so. I can't. Your CV coming out, you know, incredibly impressive to any future
Thank you.
employers that you might have. So, but I'm really excited, and I am serious about. Once you publish that post-traumatic stress article, and you can talk about that research, you may, you know, contact your friends and family and tell them there's another article they need to read. But I want to be like in the top five people you contact after publication, because I can't wait to see. You have such a unique data set that I doubt. You know, not everybody has access to. So I'm really excited to see what comes out of that work that you do. So let's just count this as the first hopefully several podcasts we do together, because I can't wait to explore that piece of your research with you.
Sure, I'd be happy to share the link with you. It's out there.
Awesome. And
Thank you.
I'll put your university link in the show notes. Anything else? If somebody wants to get in touch with you or learn more about your work, is that the best place for them to go, or any other place that you might recommend?
No, I think that would be the best place to go. Are you looking at the staff profile there?
Yeah,
Yeah,
absolutely.
that would be the place. Yeah. Thank
Awesome.
you for
Well,
that.
I will put that link in the show notes. And my friend, I cannot wait to have you back on the show at a
Thank
later
you.
date. So thank you so much. And just as somebody again who's worked with veterans more on the
Yeah.
clinical side of things, what you're doing, we have a lot of conversations with the military about how we get special forces to be more special with the heart rate variability and HRV biofeedback. So your work is so important to, like, over here we have the Veterans Administration and helping so many of our vets that have physical and mental health injuries from experiencing war, that you know this research is just so powerful. Already forwarding it to a bunch of people that I know doing the work. So I appreciate you. I appreciate your focus on this. It's a huge gift to anybody who cares about this population, which should be all of us. So thank you so much for your work.
Thank you very much. And it's been a pleasure to be here. And like I said, you know, I've been an avid listener and I've been following all your posts also. It's been a true pleasure to be here. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. And we'll see everybody
Thank
next
you.
week.